Flowers are beautiful, but a lot of lovely annuals are thirsty, and it has been a pretty dry summer. This hour, drought-resistant annuals and water-wise perennials, trees, and shrubs. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock will share his list of Denny's drought-tolerant annual flowers and give us some other ideas for keeping our yards and gardens beautiful even when the weather is dry. Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Denny will answer your questions. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it has been a dry summer across much of the state. A lot of yards are showing it. Keeping flowers, especially annuals, looking beautiful takes a lot of watering during this kind of weather. But this hour, we're going to look for some alternative ideas. With me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And also Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock is here. Hello, Denny.
Great to be here, Charity.
And I know you have put a great deal of thought into drought-tolerant or drought-resistant flowers and put together a really great list for us. What have you been seeing this summer that made you think about this?
Well, I'm just going by my own yard. I looked up, and since Memorial Day, I've had less than 4 inches of rain in my yard, and in August, less than 0.5 inch. So we should be more like 12 inches of rain for the summer, or 3 inches of rain this point in August. So I can tell what's happening in my own yard and what needs watering more frequently than things that don't. And it is sort of a passion of mine looking at drought-tolerant perennials and trees and shrubs. And so I just extend that to annuals as well.
Well, and a lot of annuals, I mean, they take a lot of care. We have to, of course, plant them every year, but they are thirsty plants, aren't they?
They generally are. That's sort of the case, that if a plant's going to be putting out these, you know, flimsy flowers, I'll say, they're tender tissue. And so to keep that tissue full of water, it takes a lot of water to the root zone in most cases. But there really are quite a few plants that don't need as much water as others. They are going to need some water when you get them established at the beginning of the season, because they have these tiny little root systems. Once they get their root system established, these drought-tolerant ones need much less water. For example, my narrow-leaf zinnias, I planted them in May, as you normally would expect, and watered them in a few times when I planted them. But until last week, I had not watered them all summer long, and they were not wilting until that point.
Wow. Impressive. So before we get deeper into your list of a dozen or so drought-tolerant annual flowers, what are the thirstiest annual flowers? What are the ones that just need constant watering?
Well, let's see. Some of the ones that need lots of water, you just kind of can think of most anything. You want to come up with some?
Impatiens.
Oh, yes. Impatiens are one of the worst. They're the ones that if it gets even on a sunny afternoon, they'll wilt down and you may need to add some more water. So they're very, very fleshy and wilt down a lot. I tend to not grow the ones that are real,
right,
real thirsty.
Right, and I totally put you on the spot there. Although impatiens are your favorites, right, Richard?
Because I have a lot of shade, yes. And they do like a constant supply of moisture. They're not drought tolerant, but if they have the moisture, they're just fine.
All right. So, Denny, you put together this great list. We will dig into that. If you're looking for something that's beautiful but doesn't need constant water, other than the zinnia, let's start at the top.
Okay. Well, maybe I should talk about them in sort of categories, because people might
Sure.
want to think about them that way. So one thing you can think about is something that has silvery foliage often is drought tolerant. So the reason that they're drought tolerant is that silvery foliage comes from hairs on the leaves, and those hairs reflect sunlight as well as trap moisture in by the leaf. So a couple annuals with silvery type foliage, one that most people are probably most familiar with would be Dusty Miller. It's got the silvery foliage. But also Mealy Cup Sage, that's the blue-flowered sage, that tends to have silvery foliage as well. So those are a couple definite silvery foliage plants that fit that thing.
And that adds such a lovely texture to the garden. I love that look.
It does great texture. It also is a great separator. That is, if you've got a couple colors that clash, put that silver in between, and then you can put the magenta right by the hot orange, and they won't clash. You know, so that's a good way to mix that up.
Nice.
Another category you might want to think about are plants with real thick, fleshy, or succulent foliage. So the best example I can think there is the moss rose or portulaca. That's one I never have to plant in my garden. I planted it about 12 years ago, and it self-seeds and comes up in the driest, worst growing areas you can imagine. So right along the sidewalk or driveway, out by the roadway, where nothing else will grow, it will grow in hot, dry, compacted soil.
And it's very pretty. A real variety of colors with that too, right?
Yes, that is one you can get virtually any color. I have a bright magenta one that keeps self-seeding, but you can get them in orange and yellow and a red. You know, they're the fiesta, the party time of the plants.
Well, no, it's something that self-seeds that well, though. I mean, that sounds like something you might want to be a little wary of if you don't like that kind of thing, because although it is an annual, if it's an annual that's taking care of its own planting, you don't have a lot of control over where it's going to be.
That's true. Although their root system is not extensive, so they're real easy to either hoe off or pull out. So I find that if they come up where I don't want them, it's pretty easy to get rid of them. It's not like a perennial plant where you're going to have to dig down 12 inches to get the root system out or it's going to come back. But you're right. It can be a little bit weedy in that regard. They might show up where you don't want them. Its close cousin, the portulaca weed, is one that if you let go in your vegetable garden, you're going to have it everywhere.
All right. So at least careful with that one. And do those bloom all summer?
They do. It sometimes takes them a little while to get going in the springtime because they love the hot, dry conditions. So they won't be real floriferous, say, in May, perhaps. But usually by June, they're in flower, and they're gorgeous right now and will be up until the freeze-up. So they do keep going.
Nice. All right. What other category should we be thinking about?
The other really big category are flowers that dry well. As you might guess, if they hold their shape and color when you dry them, they don't have a lot of moisture in them, and so those that dry real well are good drought-tolerant plants. Quite a few fit that category. The coxcomb or celosia is one that dries really well. I just cut a bunch of mine last night that I'm going to dry down for fall arrangements. Globe amaranth or gumfrina is another one that dries really well. Status, straw flower. Those are a few that are going to dry really well.
Nice. So great for fall arrangements.
Yes,
something to bring a little color into the house and keep it after everything freezes.
Yeah. And then a couple others on the list that people may not think about are the vinca or Madagascar periwinkle. It is a perennial down in Florida, but here it's definitely an annual. But I've got real experience this year. I transplanted some in the middle of July. As you may remember, July was not only dry, it was also extremely hot.
Yes.
I did water them in a couple times, but they never skipped a beat. They will take a beating. Richard says in his yard, he never waters them at all. He goes around, waters everything else, but can skip the vinca.
Yep, they're fine.
That's great. Well, and I really like vinca. I feel like it has a similar look to impatiens, too. So I guess it doesn't surprise me that you have those in your yard, too, Richard.
Yep, they right next to each other, and the impatiens are wilting, and these are just fine. So,
and they don't have a mildew problem
nope,
either.
Nope, very clean plants.
Excellent.
And they've got wonderful glossy green foliage. It just kind of glimmers in the sunlight. And the new breeding on the vincas is getting much better. There's a couple new All-America selection winners, one in pink and one in orchid for next year, that the flowers are almost 2 inches in diameter. So they're really, really showy.
All right. And what else have we missed?
One that many people may not think about would be the geraniums. And we're talking about the pelargonium-type geraniums. Because they've got sort of a fleshy, thick stem, they really are quite drought-tolerant. And that includes the scented geraniums as well as the floriferous ones. So all of the geraniums really are quite drought-tolerant.
All right. And that's something I know a lot of people invest a lot of time in, their geraniums, and keeping them going for a really long time.
Right, right.
All right. What else?
Well, a couple others that are more southern plants, I would say. The Mexican sunflower, Tithonia. It's a close relative of the zinnia. It looks a lot like zinnia, but it's a zinnia on steroids, perhaps. Most of them get to be 3 to even 5 feet tall, and they're usually bright orange. There are a few yellow forms of it, but it's usually bright orange, and they're very drought tolerant. And then
And it's such a striking flower. Doesn't look quite, it has sunflower in its name. It doesn't look quite like a sunflower.
Right, because it's more of an orange daisy, should we say.
Right, yeah.
So it's got the bright yellow center with the orange petals that come out. So it's
really beautiful.
Yeah. And then there's also the lantanas, which if you grew up in Texas, you'll think it's a weed because they self-seed and go all over the place there. But here in Iowa, they die out every winter. But they have these brilliant colors, anywhere from pink to red to yellow, clusters that are extremely attractive to butterflies.
So it's like a compound blossom. It's got a lot of little blooms within
A lot of little trumpet-shaped blooms that make a big cluster, and the butterflies absolutely love them. And the foliage is often very, very fragrant. They often have a very lemony-type scented foliage. So that's another one, too. You want to plant close to a walkway, so when you walk by, you brush it a little bit and get that whiff of lemon as you go by.
Nice.
Too.
Very nice. All right. Did we finish this list?
I think the only one I haven't mentioned yet is the California poppy. And I guess we could include that one in the southern areas. That one is one, as you might guess, because it's native to California, is adapted to drier conditions during the growing season. They often kind of peter out towards the end of the season because most poppies don't like a lot of heat, but they're very drought tolerant.
All right. And looking at the California poppy, it's not like, I guess, a more I don't know what the name for the poppy that I see so often is, but this doesn't look at all like it.
It's not like the oriental poppies,
okay,
I assume is what you're thinking of. Those have really big papery flowers.
And they only last like a day because, of course, it always does rain as soon as they bloom.
Right. And the California poppy are usually orange or yellow, and they do have that sort of papery flower petals, but there's only a few of them, and it's a much smaller flower, only an inch or two in diameter instead of the 4 or 5 inches like the big oriental poppies.
And lower to the ground as
well.
And more, they last longer.
Yes.
All right, and they're beautiful. All right, that's Denny's drought-tolerant Baker's Dozen annual flowers. We will put that list up on our website, iowapublicradio.org, as well. With me, Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron. And you can join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. It can be about drought-tolerant plants or flowers, but you can ask questions about any of the plants in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we get to our first question, Denny, if I want more information about drought-tolerant, drought-resistant, or plants that don't take a lot of watering, what are some of the keywords that I should search for to find those plants?
Well, water-wise, or xeriscape would be something. I mean, of course, you can do drought because ISU has a good drought website up this year, too, because we're trying to react to what's happening. But if you're looking for drought-tolerant plants in addition to drought, I would say WaterWise and xeriscape are a couple key words to use.
Xeriscape. How do you spell that?
That is XeriScape.
All right. And let's get to questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Here's an email question from Lori in Des Moines. She says, I have a locust tree that's been damaged by a chain that was placed around it at the Y before we moved here by good intentions to reinforce it. While we were getting preventative treatment for our ash trees, we asked the professional to look at this locust. He said the chain must come off and it needs to be cabled as there's now about 2 feet of the tree that's hollow in the center. This tree shades our backyard. It's huge, beautiful, and we want to save it. I do want to get another opinion before we spend $500 and make sure this is the best route to go, but what do you think?
I would get a second opinion from another arborist. You want to get at least two opinions on this. Yes, they might have to cable the tree. That chain probably should come off, definitely. But when you basically cable, you cable high up in the canopy to kind of hold the two pieces together. But it's not a guarantee. It makes it more less like it makes it less likely, but it's not a guarantee that a storm will not still destroy it. So I would get a second opinion from a second arborist and compare what they say and also get an estimate on the cost because that can vary quite a bit too. And if they both are saying the same thing, then I would compare the cost and go ahead and proceed.
All right. Now, if this was your tree, would you think about cabling or would you think about replacing?
I would have to consider the cost and also how important that tree is to my landscape. If it's, you know, within reason as far as the cost, and if that tree is a highly valuable tree in the landscape, then I would consider doing it. If it's very expensive, if it's just one tree in the backyard, it's not that big a deal, I might just take it down.
All right. But I'm also hearing you say that this is not a permanent solution. So you kind of have to think about replacement eventually, right?
Yes, you do. But it does increase the odds of that tree surviving a storm. It doesn't guarantee that it will because you can get a horrific storm that will destroy nice, solid trees.
Right.
So, but it does help. Definitely does help.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We've got several lines open for you right now. 866-780-9100. Here's another email question at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org from Jeff in North Liberty. When should I plant two lilac plants that are about 2 feet tall? I don't know what size they'll be at maturity, but about how far do they need to be from a border fence and underground utilities?
I would find out how big they're supposed to get because that's very key as far as how you plant them, where you plant them. If it's a common lilac, that can get to be 10, 12 feet tall and also 10 to 12 feet wide. So take that into account. On the other hand, if it's a different type, like a dwarf type, which may only get maybe 5 to 6 feet tall, 5 to 6 feet wide, that makes a big difference. So I would try to find out or ascertain exactly what type that is. As far as planting them, if they're in a container, you can plant those now through basically early November.
All right. So would he be able to, say, spend some time on the internet and compare pictures to try to figure out if they're a dwarf lilac or?
Boy, if they're not blooming, it's hard to say. And if there's no label in the container, they're kind of.
He might get some idea. I mean, the dwarf lilacs tend to have smaller leaves than
right.
the common
yeah.
lilac, but the shape is much the same. So it's all a matter of perspective.
So don't plant them too close.
Right.
or if they're in a container and if they bloom next year, they could just basically place the pots in the ground over winter. So they overwinter well. And if they do bloom next year, they're small. That would suggest it's a dwarf type. And then they have some idea of the size.
Okay, so maybe just keep them safe for the winter and right. make a permanent decision in the springtime. Here's a question from Jenny in Cedar Rapids. I planted violets and pansies in May in our flower boxes on the deck. They bloomed profusely until about mid-July and then started to look pretty sad. As an experiment, I cut them back pretty severely, and they're still alive at the moment. Any thoughts on whether they might come back and bloom, or should I find something else for fall color on the deck?
Well, how patient is she? Yes, they likely will come back this fall when temperatures drop significantly more and we get, I assume she's continuing to water them, but they probably won't look really good until mid-September or later. So if she doesn't want to wait that much longer, she wants some color there, I would suggest putting something else in. And at this point, maybe she actually wants to go with, because we're getting late enough in the summer, maybe she actually wants to go with some cool season crops like the flowering kale, even some of the hardy mums that will add some color well into or beyond frost season.
Right, and color instantly instead yeah. of waiting several more weeks.
Right.
All right, let's get to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Dick is on the line in Indianola. Hi, Dick.
Good morning.
Hi.
I had a question about boxwood bushes and also Korean lilacs. I just wanted to get an opinion about if there is a best time to prune back the Korean lilacs, and also on the boxwood when I could cut the tops off, if there is a best time.
Well, as far as the boxwoods, they're a broadleaf evergreen, so they do retain their foliage in the fall. As far as pruning them, they do prune or shear pretty well. They tolerate that. I would prefer to prune them in the spring, typically around, let's say, mid-April, and then as a new growth comes on, you can shear them lightly again, maybe once or twice in early to mid-summer.
Okay, thank you. The Korean lilacs, is there a best time to cut those back?
Okay, on lilacs, as a spring flowering shrub, if you don't need to do major pruning, the best time is to do it right after they're done blooming, because they have already or are in the process of setting their flower buds for next year. So if you cut them now, you're going to cut off next season's bloom. However, if they're really, really overgrown and you want to cut them back severely, you can do that in late winter, realizing that you won't get bloom for a couple years, but it's best if you're going to do severe pruning to do that when the plant is dormant. Otherwise, wait until it's done blooming and do light pruning at that point.
Very good. Thank you so much. Appreciate
yeah.
it.
Thanks a lot for your call, Dick. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Glenn is up next in Davenport. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. I have a large trumpet vine that I've had 10 or 12 years. It's grown very large, about 12 to 15 feet high, 25 feet wide. And in the past, it has bloomed all summer long. The last couple of years, it seems it blooms immediately in the spring and then not much after that. What would be the cause of that? Does it need to be cut back?
I'm not sure. It's a tough plant. You could prune it back if you want to, fairly severely. It doesn't seem to mind that, but I don't think that should make it bloom anymore, so I'm not sure exactly what the problem is. Have you been fertilizing?
I have not.
Okay.
It actually started in the middle of a honeysuckle bush, and that
oh.
was its main structure, kind of taking over the honeysuckle bush, but always had blooms all year long from the time it started until fall.
Okay.
Last couple of years, it's bloomed initially in the spring and not much after that.
Okay. Have you pruned it recently?
I have not. A couple of years ago, a tree guy came through and he cut some back on it, but not a lot.
Okay. Well, I guess I would be inclined to prune it back early next spring and see if that maybe coaxes additional bloom. It tolerates that very well, so it shouldn't hurt it. So I'd give it a pruning next spring and see what happens.
And is it still in full sun? You know, sometimes that happens after a while. Trees around things grow bigger and create more shade. So if it's not getting full sun, that may be a reason that it's not blooming quite as much.
It is getting full sun.
Okay.
There's nothing restricting the sun around it.
Okay,
well,
so
that's
I would
good news, but...
I would prune it and see what happens.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for your call, Glenn. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Jeff is next in Des Moines. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Charity. I'm calling because Richard was kind enough to send me the name of my weeds that were on my driveway, and it turns out they're edible. But what my question is there a such thing as corn gluten to use as weed control?
Yes, that's a pre-emergent type product.
Yeah.
You can find it in some garden centers. Basically, it's a fertilizer plus a pre-emergent. And you would use that maybe in your flower beds, possibly in your lawn. It does prevent the germination of some weed seed. It's not perfect in that regard, but it does reduce the number of weeds that do germinate. So corn gluten meal, yes.
So it's not like a corn gluten from a bakery or something?
It's a corn milling byproduct.
Oh.
And actually, one of the preen products that are widely sold, one of those actually does contain corn gluten meal. The other one contains a chemical herbicide, but the one, the organic form, contains corn gluten meal.
Oh, so it's an alternative to Roundup.
Well, no. Roundup kills existing weeds. It does not prevent the germination of weed seed. Corn gluten meal is a pre-emergent. It's a alternative to a chemical pre-emergent.
All right, and an effective one as well.
Right.
And the research was done here at Iowa State. So.
Absolutely. And if you want to go back, Jeff, we've talked about corn gluten weed control a number of times on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So if you search for that on our website, I think it'll pop right up. Jeff, thanks a lot for your call. Mike is up next in Waterloo. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I am trying to rejuvenate an older lawn and have been successful with most weeds, but I am overcome with wild violets. Is there any particular formula that will work on wild violets?
Right. They're tough. They don't have a deep root system, but the base of the stem is almost like a little bulb, and so they're very resistant to herbicides. So what I would suggest is maybe using a product containing triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R, triclopyr. That tends to be the most effective on the violets, and you're going to have to spray at least twice in the fall. I would do it in the fall, and so I would probably spray, come back in 2 weeks, and do it again. And I would have a realistic expectation in that, yes, if you do that, you'll probably destroy some of them, but not all of them. You really can't achieve that complete control. But if you apply it in the fall, if you do it twice, you should be able to get pretty good control.
Sounds like I need to treat it like Creeping Charlie.
Well, no, but it's a pretty tough one. And the other option, obviously, is to dig them up, too. They actually dig up pretty easily, especially after a good rain, because they don't really have a deep root system. So you can actually dig them up.
All right. Well, good luck with that. You can also embrace them, and you can use them in your salads. We talked about that on our edible show. You can candy them. You do that, right, Denny?
That's right.
Yep. All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Here's an email question from Dave in Cedar Falls. I see Queen Anne's lace, Canadian thistles, and wild parsnip along the roadsides and city streets. How might these weeds be brought under control in the future?
It's difficult. I think the reason that you see more, for example, along the roadsides would be that the DOT, the counties, do far less mowing like they used to. And so if they're not mowed, they go ahead and produce seed. Wild carrot, wild parsnip, they're biennial plants. And so they form a little cluster of leaves the first year. The second year, they grow very rapidly. They get very tall. They bloom. And they set a lot of seed. And if we have suitable weather conditions the following spring, that seed germinates. So they're very hard to control. If you mowed, for example, you could control wild carrot, wild parsnip. You could, because they can't tolerate that mowing. But if you don't, then your options are limited, maybe a herbicide.
Well, and it's a great argument for planting native plants in roadside conditions.
Hopefully they would take over, yes.
That's the idea, at least in many places. All right, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Let's do another email question, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This one's from Kevin. He says, I have a few established forsythia bushes. They're around 8 years old. I'm experiencing quite a bit of dieback. I've pruned out the older canes over the years and watered when dry. So have you heard of any current problems with forsythia, or are they prone to certain diseases? I've always thought they were a pretty resilient plant.
I haven't heard of any problems, no. I think of them as very carefree, low maintenance. So I'm not sure what the problem is offhand. They could send a sample to the plant diagnostic clinic here at Iowa State. Maybe there's something they could find, but for the most part, they're very reliable, they're very tough, and they have very few pest problems.
And 8 years old should be in the prime
of life? Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he might consider trying a rejuvenation technique of cutting them back severely and letting new shoots come up, because they will send up new shoots pretty readily. And sometimes those newer shoots bloom a little better than older tissue. But that would be another option for him.
All right. Let's try to sneak in one more question here. Here's Jim in Marshalltown. Hi, Jim.
Oh.
Yeah. What's your question, Jim?
Yeah, hi, yeah. My backyard is overrun with Creeping Charlie, and I wondered if I went ahead and used one of those commercial double applications. How soon after the second application can I replant grass seed?
Well, I think you basically have two options. One would be if it's really very low grass there, it's mainly ground ivy or Creeping Charlie, then in that instance, I would destroy everything. And you can do that various ways. You can just till it up. You can use Roundup, whatever. And if you use Roundup, you can replant within basically a week or so. So that's not an issue. So, and the best time to sow grass seed is basically mid-August to mid-September. So you have to get on that if you intend to do that.
All right. Right now is the
yes,
time
right now.
To sow grass seed. It feels like we spend all year waiting for this moment. All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a moment. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock. You can join the conversation 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. With me today, Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock and Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Karen is on the line next in Webster City. Hi, Karen.
Hello.
Hi,
I have some tea roses that were transplanted about 10 years ago, and in their original site, they never did much of anything, but now they're taking over my flower bed, and I'd like to know what would be the best. I don't want to kill them off completely. What would be the best way to contain them, or can I contain them?
Well, tea roses, you can prune back quite severely. You just want to make sure you don't prune below the graft union so that they come up from the root zone, but any pruning, you can cut them back to, you know, even 6 inches if you want to, but I would wait to do that until next spring as they're just pushing out their new growth. But yeah, you can prune them quite severely.
I'd like to, I mean, because I have done that before, I've pruned them, but it's like they're still spreading. Is there a way to, you know, get them from spreading further and further?
Are they coming up from the root system?
Yes.
Okay. Those must not be tea roses then, because the tea roses are always grafted. So it must be the roots of the plant coming up rather than the tea roses.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry. Whatever kind, we always thought that's what it was, but whatever kind it is, they are spreading and spreading and spreading.
Well, the only way to get rid of the ones that come up from the roots like that would be actually to dig out the root system and cut it back, you know, cut it back to a smaller clump.
Okay. Looks like I got some hard work ahead of
me.
Yeah, yes.
Karen, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100. It's funny how often hard work is the answer to these questions, isn't it? Mandy is up next in Roland. Hi, Mandy.
Hi. I am calling about our dwarf our miniature lilac bush. It's very robust and healthy and is encroaching on a walkway. And we weren't sure how severely we could cut it back and still maintain the plant.
You can prune it back pretty severely, but I would do that in March, early April, and realize it may
okay.
not and realize it may not bloom as well.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Mandy. 866-780-9100 is the number. Justin is up next in Bettendorf. Hi, Justin.
Hi there. I had several fruit trees I planted earlier this year, and they're all doing great except for two peach trees. About a month ago, all of the leaves on one turned orange and fell off, and the other one is starting to do the same. And I was wondering if there's anything I could do to stop that.
Well, I'm not sure what's going on, but if that one tree has lost its leaves totally, I would suspect it's died. It's basically dead. I would take a branch and bend it sharply, and if it's dead, it's going to snap. It's brittle. It should be brittle. But I'm not sure exactly what's going on with that. They're kind of hard to grow in Iowa successfully. They tend to be short-lived. But they should survive at least the first year, so I'm not sure exactly what's going on.
The other thing I'm wondering is, as those leaves turned orange, did they sort of curl up as they were turning orange, or were they still flat and regular shaped?
They were still flat and regular shaped.
Okay, so there is a fungal disease that peach trees can get that's called Tephrina that causes sort of the reddish coloration of the foliage, and that might have been the case, but if they're perfectly flat leaves, that would not be the case in this instance.
I'm assuming you have been watering the trees?
Yes.
Okay. I would think once a week would be sufficient after maybe the first few weeks. They don't like to be wet, so if they're watered too frequently, that may be a problem, but I'm not sure if it's not a water issue.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. Now, I'm seeing color on quite a few
yes,
trees.
Right.
What's going on out there?
Well, when trees are under stress, they typically send out warning signs. And early fall coloration is one of those warning signs that, hey, I'm not doing very well, I'm under stress. And the hot, dry conditions, yes, is stressful. They're stressful. And so you're beginning to see some coloration on some of the trees because they don't like the heat, they don't like the dry conditions, they're under stress, and that's what they do.
All right. Are you seeing a lot of that in central Iowa?
Yes,
I would guess
yes.
It's not quite as dry here in southeastern Iowa as it is there, but
yes.
It's dry.
Yeah.
Yes. I have a neighbor's tree who is a maple tree that's bright red right now. Oftentimes, it's a tree that's been damaged in some other way, you know, like maybe bark damage, but it's a good cue that there's something going on in the root system, too. The tree's trying to get rid of some of its foliage, cut down on its water loss. So water those trees.
All right. And is this going to affect our fall color?
It very well could, yes. But the weather between now and, let's say, early October would be the key.
All right. We'll wait and see.
So.
Next, back to the phones, 866-780-9100. Patty from Des Moines is next. Hi, Patty.
I planted arborvitaes around Father's Day, and suddenly there's holes, like you could roll a golf ball down these. They're about that big, holes all around the base system and all around my yard. What is it, and should I kill it, and are they going to hurt my tree?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what's responsible for the holes. I guess my first inclination would be to take some soil from a garden area or whatever, put it down the hole, take a broomstick and just tamp it down in there really firmly, add some more and really tamp it in real firmly and see if those holes reappear. As far as what they might be, well, if they do, do you see something running around like a ground squirrel or a chipmunk?
I just chased the big old groundhog out of my garage, but you know, yeah, we have squinnies in the front, but I don't see squinnies in the back.
Okay, because a ground squirrel will create holes in the ground. They're not terribly big, maybe an inch or two in diameter, but they definitely like to do that, and so that could be responsible for the holes if they're not very big. A groundhog would have a much bigger hole. They like to dig also, but it'll be a much bigger hole.
Much, much bigger.
Yes.
Yeah. Are they going to hurt my trees?
I don't think the small holes will that much. Now, you planted those this year, so I would be watering them definitely. And I would keep on doing that on a regular basis. If it doesn't rain through August, September, October, into November. So make sure you keep on watering those. That's critical.
Yeah, particularly because
one of them already died, and two of them are drooping. I don't know if they're going to die or if I can save them. They're drooping and turning brownish.
Well, just make sure that you really water them well, soak them slowly and deeply, water them well, and keep on doing that on a regular basis. I would say probably every week or 10 days if it doesn't rain, but keep on doing that for the next 2 or 3 months.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. Jerry next in Des Moines. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. I put 4 rain barrels on my house this summer as part of a roofing downspout, blah, blah. I have trouble keeping them full because we don't have enough rain. So my question is, could I just go ahead and fill them with my city water and let it set for a week if there's no rain and then be able to water? That would be, I would think that would be better water than coming straight out of my hoses with the chlorine.
Well, yeah, certainly there's no problem in filling up the rain barrel with municipal tap water. And you're right that the chlorine will dissipate, but usually even just overnight it's going to dissipate. So it doesn't
doesn't even need to
sit a week.
Okay, good. When I look at the weather report and think, gosh, I'm going to have to use chlorinated city water, good. I'm going to go out and fill them after I check the weather.
All right, Jerry, thanks a lot for your call. And all right, I've always lived with well water, at least most of my life. What can chlorinated city water do? Is it a problem?
It's not really going to hurt the plants outdoors because you're only using it periodically. It may be a problem more so for house plants because that's the sole source of water. But outdoors, typically, it's not a big problem, no.
Okay, so if you water house plants with chlorinated water, though, over a long term, you can see ill effects?
Yes, chlorine and fluoride in water can cause leaf tip burn. Basically, they're types of salts. So they can cause browning of leaf tips if you don't have pure water or rainwater to flush it away.
Okay. As well water users need to know these things someday, I guess. Luke is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Luke.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm curious about Lombardy poplars and what the panel's opinion is on them. My wife and I are looking for some large screening, fast-growing screening, and know that arborvitae is used often, but we're looking at some different trees.
Okay. Well, as far as their main attribute is, they do grow very fast. They don't take up much space. The downside is they tend to be fairly short-lived. So if you were to plant these as a screen, I would plant something else for a more permanent screen. You could plant both, enjoy the poplars when they grow, and maybe in 15, 20 years get rid of them, and you have a new plant to take its place. And, that'd be my suggestion.
And understand that as they die, they will look ugly because they're not going to all die at once. They'll have dead branches here and there. So pretty to look at to start with, but short-lived and ugly in the interim.
Okay. And is arborvitae a good thing to mix in with them? I've seen some subspecies that are large growing. They get up to 40 to 60 feet tall.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't interplant them. I'd probably have them separate rows, but arborvitaes are pretty reliable. They vary in size depending on the cultivar variety. Some are very, very narrow, fairly short in stature. Others can get to be very large. But they're very useful as a screen because they're effective year-round from spring through winter.
Mm-hmm. And what's the age span on those? Is not 10 to 15 years?
Oh, no. They can easily be 20, 30. Oftentimes, if you go to a cemetery, you'll see these in a cemetery. They've been there 50, 60, 75 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Luke. Next, Irv in Oskaloosa. Hi, Irv.
Hi. I've got a question about the tree replacement for an ash. I know that's been talked about before. I noticed that the red oaks and so forth and honey locusts, lindens, and all those. Is there a cultivar out there of any kind that doesn't have downsides? I think that ought to be a requirement to be put on there the honey locust has, you know, millions of little tiny leaves that get in everything.
Yes.
And the lindens tend to have that little seed pod leaf that falls on the ground all summer long. Is there anything out there that isn't just a, I don't know, that's got some downside to it that you can put in outside of Fermentation?
The only perfect tree is a artificial tree. If they're a live tree,
they're not very perfect either.
but they wouldn't drop anything.
Right.
But
yeah, I think what Richard's trying to say is the only non-maintenance tree is an artificial tree.
Right. Because if it's a live tree, it's going to produce something. The oaks obviously have the male catkins in the spring. They have the acorns in the fall. The honey locust, it does flower in the spring. They're very small. They're not very showy. They can be annoying. And then you have the small leaflets in the fall. The maples have the whirly birds or the seeds. And so they're just doing what's natural. They typically produce flowers or seeds or nuts or whatever. So they're basically just doing what's natural. So there's always a little bit of upkeep required.
Okay. I didn't know if there were a really good tree for that or not. You know,
I am constantly cleaning out my gutters because of the trees. So that's just the way it is.
And even if there were one tree that was that, we would not recommend that everyone plant that same tree. The main thing for ash replacement is make sure you're planting something other than what your neighbors or neighborhood is, so that we don't end up with a monoculture of all one kind of tree again.
All right, Irv, good luck. Thanks a lot for your call. Sherry's got another tree question from Centerville. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is a red bud question. We have a well-established red bud that is, most of the trunks on it are leaning about 30 degrees. It has a new, it has some dead part of it that is still left on there. I mean, the birds like it and stuff, and I don't, maybe I should chop it down, but it also has a new thing coming up, and like a new trunk coming up, and that one is not leaning in the same direction. It looks like it's sort of very slightly starting to bend the other way. I'm wondering if I ought to stake that or something to try to prevent more weight all going in one direction.
I think I would definitely prune out the dead wood. The red bud is not a perfect specimen. Oftentimes it has character.
Yes.
The shape is not always perfect, and that's kind of the nice thing about the red bud. It has some character to it. So I would just be inclined just to leave it, but cut out the deadwood.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for your call, Sherry. Joyce in Marshall County. Hi, Joyce.
Hello. I have a question about crown vetch. I have some that has popped up in an area where I don't want it, but I do have an area where I would like to get it going. Can that be transplanted? Do I need to take seeds off of it? What's the best way to do that?
Well, I would maybe consider this more carefully because crown vetch can be very invasive. And so consider that.
It would be in an area where it's contained.
Okay. So, but as far as transplanting it, sure, you could. I would just go out to the established patch in early spring and just dig up some clumps and move them to the new site.
Okay, we'll give that a try.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. And let's slip in Ned from Des Moines. Very quickly, Ned, what's your question?
My question deals with fescue in my yard. It's sort of creeping in patches around my front lawn. How do I control that or get rid of it?
Well, there's different types of fescue. We have things like the fine leaf fescues, creeping red fescue, hard fescues. They do well in the shade, and we actually grow those in the shady areas. It's a nice grass. It's very compatible with bluegrass. Tall fescue is a different type of grass, and some of the old-fashioned varieties are very coarse and very wide blades, and it's a perennial grass. The only way to get rid of it would be to dig it up or spot treat with Roundup.
All right, Ned, thanks a lot for your call. And Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron. Denny Schrock, thank you.
You're welcome, Charity. Great to be here.
Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock, and we will put up Denny's list of drought-tolerant annual flowers on our website, iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.